and Club Classics. I'm here every Sunday mornings between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. So make sure you stop by and take a listen and try to win a pair of tickets during the ticket giveaways. That's Soul Central Station every Sunday morning between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. on your Peace and Justice radio station, WBAI 99.5 FM.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York, where the time is just about 7 o'clock on a Wednesday. That means time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined in the studio by Mike.
Hi there.
And on the other side of the room, not Kevin.
Hello.
Down in Philadelphia, Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
You sound particularly low tonight, Bernie.
I mean, the pitch or the volume?
Well, the volume, mostly.
Oh, well, I'll have to stop drooling into my microphone.
Yeah, okay. Let's try that as a New Year's resolution. And the program is Off the Hook. We talk about all kinds of interesting developments in the technology world, in the hacker world, and all sorts of other fun things like that. We argue, we bicker, we take phone calls. It's a lot of fun. Why don't you stick around? We have a feature, which I think we should get theme music for, called Data Loss of the Week. And this week, the award goes to JCPenney. Technically, it should be a company called GE Money. I'd never heard of this company before, GE Money. I guess they're the same GE that owns NBC, right?
And the rest of the world.
And apparently they own money now, too. So I guess if you're spending money, it's GE Money that you're spending. These guys, they handle credit card operations for JCPenney and many other retailers, up to 100 other retailers. Well, guess what? Personal information for about 650,000 customers has gone missing. Yes, they lost it. The missing information includes social security numbers for about 150,000 of those people. The information was on a backup computer tape that was discovered missing last October. We're only finding out about this now. It was being stored at a warehouse run by Iron Mountain Inc. You store your tapes with somebody called Iron Mountain Inc. You think it's going to be safe, but no. It might be safe against a nuclear holocaust, but it's not safe against somebody losing it. And apparently that's what happened. Somebody lost it. The data storage company looked for it, but was not able to be found. Now, of course, what they're saying is there's no indication of theft or anything of that sort, no evidence of fraudulent activity, but a lot of evidence of stupidity.
I have a question.
Yeah.
If I had shopped at JCPenney, which I don't think I ever have, would I be eligible for a year of free credit monitoring?
I suspect you might be, because that's almost always what they do. I'm looking in this article now to see if they mention that. But almost every single time that this happens, they offer people 1 year free credit monitoring, as if 1 year is going to be enough for somebody who actually takes your information. And I don't know, does it happen when you sign up for that service, when you take them up on their offer, does it renew automatically and bill you, or does it expire like it should?
I subscribe to that myself.
Uh-huh.
When TD Ameritrade screwed up and with an account that I had discontinued like 5 years ago, and they still had my information in their database, and then, oops, they exposed their database inappropriately. So I signed up for this. I did not have to give them my credit card or any other information, so there's no way they could bill my credit card after a year is up. But the price, and after that, I'm sure they're going to beg you and bug you and spam you to pay up for the next year, which is, I think it's like $60 or $99 a year for this dubious service.
Well, you got to figure whatever information the company that lost your data had on you, now these people have on you, so they can call you on your phone or send you mail or email, whatever.
Yes.
So
it's more information getting out there. It can be, it's kind of like putting yourself on the do not call list. That list does get around to all the telemarketers so they know who not to call. And as we know, not every single one of those telemarketers is ethical. So your information gets out to people you don't want it to when you put your do not call list.
Do you ever hear of these guys, the Identity Theft Resource Center?
No, I like that.
That sounds useful if I ever wanted to steal an identity.
Well, they're growing. By the day, they're adding new buildings to their complex. They say there was a sixfold increase last year in the number of records reported compromised in the United States. 125 million. That's almost everybody in the country. That's like a good percentage of everybody in the country, isn't it?
Yeah, it's probably a little less than half.
That means half the people in this room.
And half
of us had our data compromised.
And probably like small children don't have that much data to lose. So
that's true.
You got to figure.
What's the population of the States? What, 300 million?
Something like that.
Yeah, and 125 million last year. Of course, that's the number of records compromised. Maybe some people have more than one record. I don't know. So, Bernie, when did it happen to you?
I think about 3 months ago I got an email from TD Ameritrade, who I haven't done business with for many years, and I think about 5 years, and they said I'd been compromised, and I called them about it, and they offered me this. Well, they didn't even offer it to me right off the bat. I had to, like, complain and make noise about it, and then they offered me this 3 years of credit monitoring service. I don't remember the name of the company. I could look it up.
And that shut you up?
Well, you know, it's hard to claim. They also said that it was very unlikely my data was in that database because they haven't done business with me for years, but they said there was a possibility, and, you know, I don't trust them completely.
Mm-hmm.
What recourse do I have? I mean, I could probably sue them, but I researched, and there's no class action against them, so I didn't have a class to join.
Well, why don't you just slowly, and so that everybody understands, say their name very clearly, and that can be your little bit of vengeance.
TD Ameritrade is careless with its customers' data.
TD Ameritrade?
Yes.
Okay. And where are they located?
I don't know.
Or are they everywhere, like a lot of these corporations?
You can just look them up online, but they're, I don't know where their headquarters is, honestly.
I had a fun experience on my phone bill. Everybody should do this. Everybody should look at their phone bill every single month because there's always surprises on there you don't know about. In fact, in my case, sometimes I find phone numbers I've forgotten about. And save a lot of money when I get them disconnected. But I looked at my phone bill this month, and I actually saw something on the billing page. It was a Verizon line, landline.
This is your landline, Verizon.
Yes, this is a landline. And basically, you have your charges laid out nice and clearly under new charges, Verizon basic local services, and then you have Verizon optional services, which, in my case, apparently Verizon Optional Services includes Verizon Freedom Essentials. So is it optional or is it essential? Which is it? How can something that's essential be optional? But apparently in the Verizon world it can be. So my Verizon Freedom Essentials include things like call waiting. Call waiting 2? What's call waiting 2? Does anybody know what that is? A sequel to call waiting? Now, this time call waiting is angry.
I know what it is.
What is it?
I think I know what it is. It's probably maybe it's caller ID over call waiting.
You yeah, you know, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. It's the toner on my printer that's going bad. It's actually call waiting ID. It looked like a 2 with a little closed parentheses, but actually it's an ID. Call waiting ID.
It's a different kind of service which they charge even more for. It's mm-hmm. crazy that allows your caller ID to work while you're on the phone, and the second call comes in through call waiting,
right?
And it'll still show it up. Whereas if you don't have this call waiting over caller ID, or caller ID over call waiting service. It'll only work if it's the first call.
Okay. And for some reason, I don't know why they do this on the Verizon bills, they list anonymous call rejection as something under services, and it's always got a price of zero next to it. It's not something they bill for, but it looks like it's something they could bill for one day if they decide to push that through the PSC. But in any event, all these little services are listed, and then underneath that, all other charges. Then I've got something for Verizon Long Distance, and then the final category, discounted telecommunication service for $18.47. Now, that looks innocuous enough, you know, Verizon Long Distance, okay, I guess I made a call or something, and then discounted telecommunication service, well, I guess it's a good thing that it's discounted, right? But then I asked myself, well, what in God's name is it? What is discounted telecommunication service? I turned to the back page, and sure enough, there's a page for this company called Discounted Telecommunication Service. It reminds me of the old days. Remember this, when we used to have all these alternate operator service companies, AOS companies, that would bill you in Teledial, I think was one of them, or in Telecall, and all kinds of other names that I haven't heard in a long time. Basically, anybody could bill anything to your phone number, and you pay something like $5 a minute for these third-party calls. And your phone company would bill you on behalf of these companies. It was a real pain to get them taken off your bill. So this reminded me of it. I just saw two items underneath discounted telecommunications, one dated November 29th, one dated December 28th, both for directory assistance, both in the amount of $8.50. And so I had to interrogate a number of people on this and demand to know if somebody had called overseas directory assistance, which I understand is expensive. I didn't think it was that expensive.
It's discounted.
Who knows? So after a couple of polygraphs and things like that, I determined that it did not come from us. This was not something that we did. So I looked it up. I put that company name onto the Internet, which is a very handy utility to have, and found out that this is a company in Ohio, and this kind of thing has happened before, where an $8.50 monthly charge appears on phone bills without the knowledge of the people that have the phones. And what the charge is for something known as unlimited directory assistance, which I guess is a good idea. If you call directory assistance a lot, you can call them and not be billed. You just have to pay this $8.50 a month charge. But if you don't ask for it, that's kind of unfair. So I called them up, and this time I had the foolproof excuse. Usually when you call these companies, you have to argue with them. And they say, well, somebody in your house must have ordered this. Somebody must have dialed this. This is what you do to shut them up from the beginning. You say, this is a fax machine. There isn't even a phone attached to it. There's no way I could have ordered this. And there was nothing they could say to it. And it got taken off immediately. Of course, they might have taken it off anyway. They seem pretty nice. But I'd like to know how it got on there in the first place. Maybe one of our listeners put it on one of our phone lines. And if so, well, okay, the jig is up. We figured out how to take it off. Now, why don't you tell us how you put it on? There might be a security hole that allows people to subscribe other people to this service.
$8.50 is not even a good deal for unlimited access if you have the Internet.
Well, the thing is, directory assistance isn't the way it used to be. It used to be you could call a particular area code and get a directory assistance operator, and it used to be free way back. But even after it wasn't, you still were getting somebody who was local to the area and knew the area and could look things up and tell you things. Now you're pretty much getting the same automated service anywhere in the country. And, yeah, you're right. You can just look it up on the Internet or use that Google service. What is it? What's the free Google 411?
Google 411?
Yeah. And that seems to work, and that's free. I'm sure we're selling our souls to Google, but it's something anyway.
There's another service I've used many times, and that is you just call some number at random. Like, suppose I'm looking for a florist. I suppose I'm looking for a good florist, and this has happened to me many times. I need to send flowers to somebody elsewhere in the country, and I don't know anything about that area, and directory assistance doesn't. So I'll just call, knowing that I can look up the area code in exchange of the city. I'll just call some number at random, and usually in the second or third try, I'll get somebody who'll be very helpful and tell me, you know, I've used this florist. They're really good. And you just have to social engineer them, and you can get all kinds of great information out of people that are local to the area if you're just friendly and say, hey, this is my situation. Maybe you could help me out.
The truth of the matter is, Bernie, we are all directory assistance operators.
Yes.
We just have to awaken that part of our spirit and help each other out and just join hands across this country.
I would do it.
Yeah, totally. And we'll give out your number later so people can call you to get numbers in the Philadelphia area. Okay, here's an example of, you ever have, I'm sure you're familiar with this, Bernie, you ever had a judge completely not get something right?
No, I'd be shocked if that ever happened.
Yeah, I think you've had more than enough experience with that.
A judge?
A judge.
I mean, judges are supposed to, by definition, be excellent, you know, at judging.
Well, I've had a judge get it wrong, and I'm sure you have, Mike. Have you ever had a judge staring you in the face, getting it wrong? No, you haven't had that yet?
I've mostly avoided judges altogether.
All right, let's see if we can make that happen for you. And not Kevin, I'm sure you haven't gotten to that stage yet, but you will.
Or have I?
You will. Maybe you have. Maybe you have.
There's no way to tell.
Yeah, there's a lot we don't know about you. This North Dakota judge really got it wrong. He basically said his conclusion was that people doing zone transfers of internet domains were basically breaking the law. The behavior in conducting a zone transfer of this defendant was unauthorized within the meaning of the North Dakota computer crime law. The court rejects the test for authorization articulated by the defendant's expert to find all access authorized, which is successful, would essentially turn the computer crime laws of this country upside down. The defendant has engaged in a variety of activities without authorization on the internet. Those activities include port scanning, hijacking computers, and the compilation and publication of WHOIS lookups without authorization from Network Solutions. What do you think about that?
I ran into the same argument myself about 11, 12 years ago in my federal criminal case, where I was charged with the possession of hardware or software for the unauthorized access to telecommunications. Well, actually, possession of hardware or software for the modification of telecommunications instruments for the unauthorized access to telecommunications services. And my appeal really hinged on a couple of key ideas, and one of them is, what's the definition of unauthorized? The statute didn't specify who does the authorization. And even though what I was doing was just making people be able to program a second cell phone on their same account, you know, just like you can plug two phones into your house wiring and have two phones, they're still on the same account. You're not really defrauding anybody. You're still paying for all the phone calls. The phone company was saying that, no, that's not authorized. So, you know, when you have this vague term about unauthorized, I mean, who does the authorization? It didn't even say the wireless carrier does the authorization. It just says unauthorized. So if you, Emmanuel, said it wasn't authorized, the prosecutor would say, yep, it wasn't unauthorized. Emmanuel didn't authorize it.
Okay, but Bernie, this case in particular, though, this is something that you don't have to have any equipment for to program anything. You don't have to have any kind of knowledge, technical knowledge of any sort. You just have to be at a terminal and type a certain – I mean, Mike, maybe you could explain what a zone transfer is for the uninitiated.
I'll try.
All right.
So people may have heard of the domain name system, which translates names like, you know, 2600.com or whatever into the numeric addresses that computers actually use to talk to each other.
IP addresses?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so all the hosts in 2600.com, so www.2600.com, whatever else, .2600.com, and so on.
That secret one, yeah.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about that on the radio.
Let's move on.
All those comprise what's called the zone, the 2600.com zone. And there's something called a zone transfer where you can basically say, hello, please give me that whole list, all those things, including the secret ones. And you can configure your server to say either, yeah, here it is, or you can configure it to say, no, you can't have that. It's very straightforward to set up.
So how would someone get that information? What would they have to type? What kind of thing would they have to type?
Dig or something.
Dig, okay. And it's a simple command. Everybody uses it.
I'm sure there's a way to do it on the web as well.
Now, why would somebody object to somebody doing this?
Well, you know, they might not want them to find out about their secret host or what have you.
Okay, I could understand that.
But, you know, again, if that's the case, they could just turn it off, but not talk about it.
So this judge, his contention is that if you do a zone transfer, you have to get permission first. You have to contact the person somehow and say, may I do a zone transfer? What's the equivalent of, for those people who don't really see what this is all about? I guess it's the equivalent of just going onto a website or something? I mean, it's not much more difficult than that, is it?
No. It's technically very similar to going onto a website. It's a little bit less popular, so the software tools aren't as friendly. But
And he seemed to also, and he did also say, that the compilation and publication of Whois lookups without authorization from Network Solutions, Network Solutions, of course, being one of the biggest registrars, one of the ones that really fouls things up sometimes. We won't get into that. But basically, you can type Whois, anybody, any domain name on the Internet, and pretty much get information back. It's not always the correct information. It's not always provided. But if it is provided, he's saying that you don't have the right to save that information.
What exactly was this guy accused of?
That's something I'm not exactly sure, because I'm reading this from a kind of a blog site called CircleID.com, and I'm not really sure what this guy was charged with. The real story here is that a North Dakota judge says that zone transfers and Whois information is private and you can't access it without getting permission. It's kind of scary when people have that. And this guy had expert witnesses testifying on his behalf, but the judge still rejected it.
Were there expert witnesses or so-called experts testifying to the contrary?
I'd like to know. I'd like to know. I don't see that here, but I'd certainly like to know if that is the case. And if you know of bad legislation, we'd like to hear about it as well. Our email address, oth@2600.com. Now, this is interesting, too. This came out of the EU just yesterday, in fact. IP addresses, which we were just mentioning, those are strings of numbers that identify computers on the Internet, should generally be regarded as personal information. That's according to the head of the European Union's group of data privacy regulators. Actually, they said this on Monday. Germany's Data Protection Commissioner, Peter Schaar, leads the EU group, which is preparing a report on how well the privacy policies of Internet search engines operated by Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and others comply with EU privacy law. And he told the European Parliament hearing on online data protection that when someone is identified by an IP or Internet protocol address, then it has to be regarded as personal data. Now, Google, of course, disagrees with this. They insist an IP address merely identifies the location of a computer, not who the individual user is. And that is true, but does not take into consideration that many people regularly use the same computer and IP addresses. Schaar acknowledged that IP addresses for a computer may not always be personal or linked to an individual. For example, some computers in Internet cafes or offices are used by several people. Treating IP addresses as personal information would have implications for how search engines, of course, record data. Privacy advocate at the nonprofit Electronic Privacy Information Center said it was absurd for Google to claim that stripping out the last two figures from the stored IP address made the address impossible to identify by making it one of 256 possible configurations. According to Mark Ruttenberg, who's been on this show in the past, it's one of the things that make computer people giggle. The more the companies know about you, the more commercial value is obtained. Interesting. I mean, this whole thing about what constitutes private information. Do you think an IP address is private information?
I think it certainly can be, but I'm more fascinated by the fact, and we've mentioned this on the show before, that European actually has a legislative privacy framework for debating this issue. In the United States, Google can do whatever it wants.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that is true. I'm also curious, they say that IP addresses are personal data. Does that mean that that you own them? Does that mean you can take them with you wherever you go? Like a name, like a social security number. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. Like to follow that story in the months ahead. Okay, what else has been going on? The Church of Scientology, their website has been hacked, according to various sources. The Church of Scientology website being attacked by hackers, of course, in the wake of the Tom Cruise video making it out onto the Internet. Boy, that was a lot of fun. This attack was launched last Wednesday by a user calling himself Anonymous. Yeah, I've heard about him. And it was on the website Project Chanology, Chanology. The history section of the site explains in a satirical fashion that the incident was prompted by the Church of Scientology's attempts to remove a promotional video featuring Scientologist Tom Cruise from YouTube. And YouTube is complying. You can't find that video on YouTube anymore. I was looking for it.
It's still elsewhere on the Internet, though.
Well, it's hard to find. Can we tell people where it is, or are they going to come for us?
I've forgotten, but I know I've seen some websites that have received letters from the Church of Scientology and said, "Yeah, we don't care."
I saw the video. I was trying to figure it out. You see all this. There's music in the background, and you wonder: did the people who put it up on the internet, are they the ones who added the music, or is this the way the video actually plays out? And it's kind of hard to find a straight answer to that. So this can all be solved if somebody from the church would just send us the tape and we'll look at it and be able to tell people the truth.
What's so controversial about the video?
There's really nothing that controversial except that it makes Tom Cruise look a little crazy. But then again, okay, you know what? Being a little crazy is fine in this day and age. If you take everything he's been saying in that video, and it really is worth watching. He's making all kinds of references to things that we have no idea what he's talking about, you know, all kinds of acronyms and things like that, and just getting all crazy enthusiastic and jumping up and down. You compare that to other religious outbursts of the past and present, and it fits right in. It fits right in.
So he's using a lot of Scientology jargon in the video? Is that what's going on?
Well, it didn't make any sense to me, so yeah, I guess so. I guess
he
so.
He uses a lot of jargon.
Jargon? Yeah, he must. Anyway, so apparently, this is showing up on sites like Gawker.com, Gawker.com. The thing is, what you have to understand here is that whenever an organization tries to stop something from getting out, that's when the internet reacts and they just sort of lash back and it gets out all the more. And, you know, I'm certainly not condoning attacks like this where a website is shut down, because I think that's always wrong. I think it's always wrong to silence somebody. This is the kind of thing that leads to it. You get the reaction from all kinds of people out there, and unfortunately, this is one of them. But I don't know. It's seems like more of the same thing that we've seen over the past decade or so. All right. What else has been going on in the world? Any news from you guys?
Time Warner is going to test internet billing based on usage.
I saw that. Now, that means that people who use the internet more will pay more, and people who use it less will pay the same.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not like people who use it less are going to suddenly pay less. Mm-hmm. Then it might be fair. But I'm sure this is just a revenue increase. They haven't released the actual pricing yet, but... Mm-hmm. It will be interesting to see what happens. This is very common, particularly in Australia, where you don't have unlimited internet like we have for most broadband plans here. You pay by the megabyte, and it gets expensive if you use it a lot.
Yeah, but when you say unlimited, do you really mean unlimited here? If you have constant throughput on your connection, do they not come after you and say stop that or cut it back a little bit?
Well, I remember a story we talked about maybe a year ago about someone who's using unlimited internet on their AT&T cell phone. Mm-hmm. And after they downloaded about 300 gigs worth of – or used about 300 gigs of bandwidth, AT&T came after them and charged them with a ridiculous amount of money. Mm-hmm. Because actually their plan is not unlimited.
Yeah, so the way they define the word can differ. So I'm not really sure that we get completely unlimited as it is. They put caps on it. Obviously, they put caps on cable modems so that you can't go above a certain speed.
I'm still not familiar, and maybe our listeners will send me a link and tell me that I'm wrong. I'm still not familiar of any cable or DSL provider in the States that just secretly has a secret limit of bandwidth that they charge you more. There are some that will cut you off, mm-hmm. but that will charge you more, I think, is a new thing for the States at least.
I think both Time Warner and Comcast are both ISPs who have cut people off for exceeding the secret limit, but they won't divulge what that limit is. So it's really a catch-22 situation. They should at least be straightforward and say, all right, if you download more than this a month, then it's limited. So it's not unlimited. I guess the reason they can't say what that limit is because then they couldn't say it's unlimited.
True. That does make sense in the corporate world.
Time Warner Cable, according to this Reuters article, is hoping the move will not confuse consumers.
I'm not confused. They are doing exactly what I expect them to do. All right. This story has been bouncing around in various places with increasing shrillness. The title, which moved on the Associated Press about a week ago, Fed sets standards for protecting power companies from cyber attacks. Now, this is the latest big thing, that power companies are targeted by cyber attacks. And basically, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has approved cybersecurity standards to protect the electric industry from hackers. Because, as you know, we declared war on them last year. The Edison Electric Institute, I've never heard of them, which represents investor-owned utilities that supply about 70% of the nation's electric generation, had advocated for standards and welcomed the decision. Federal regulators last Thursday approved the first cybersecurity standards for the nation's electric industry following growing concerns about the power grid's vulnerabilities. Everyone's talking about growing concerns, increased risk. Listen to this. The power grid generating plants and refineries are increasingly threatened by hackers who could cause major disruptions and economic chaos in the United States. That's according to the Government Accountability Office. Now, they're suddenly saying that it could happen. We could be facing this because of the hackers. It's all this theoretical nonsense that's designed to promote fear.
Well, I mean, on the other hand, upgrading the security of their systems is probably a smart idea. They shouldn't have to wait until the grid goes down to do it. But
if they have no security, yeah, definitely get some security. Definitely make it as good as possible.
But the terminology is a bit odd.
They're casting blame at here's something else. Let's go a step further. Actually, I found this on a site called MichelleMalkin.com. I guess it's a blog of sorts, but it's just an interesting quote that apparently she found. Hackers literally turned out the lights in multiple cities after breaking into electrical utilities and demanding extortion payments before disrupting the power. That's according to a senior CIA analyst who told utility engineers this at a trade conference. All the break-ins occurred outside the United States. That's according to CIA analyst Tom Donahue. The U.S. government believes some of the hackers had inside knowledge to cause the outages. Donahue did not specify what countries were affected, I'm not sure why not, or when the outages occurred, or how long the outages lasted, because that's
or any information at all that we could use to verify this.
Accountability,
yeah.
You don't need that. But he said they happened in several regions outside the United States. Okay, guys, we've got something. Let's go with that. All right. In at least one case, Donahue said, the disruption caused a power outage affecting multiple cities. We do not know who executed these attacks or why, but all involved intrusions through the Internet. Who in God's name keeps the power grid on the Internet? Does that make any sense at all?
Well, the people who do ought to upgrade their security, is all
and
I'm saying.
And if you keep it on the Internet, is it not possible that some other foul-up on your behalf has resulted in the lights being turned out? Rather than pointing the fingers at hackers. This thing that is being said about extortion, though, I'd like to know more about that. Shouldn't be hard to find out. But anyway, the Bush administration obviously is increasingly worried about the little understood risks from hackers to the specialized electronic equipment that operates power, water, and chemical plants. In a test last year, the Homeland Security Department produced a video showing commands quietly triggered by simulated hackers, having such a violent reaction that an enormous generator shudders as it flies apart and belches black and white smoke. Yeah, the recorded demonstration called the Aurora Generator Test was conducted in March by government researchers investigating a dangerous vulnerability in computers at U.S. utility companies known as Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition Systems. The programming flaw was fixed, and equipment makers urged utilities to take protective measures. Okay, you know, a big prize goes to anybody who can bring that video to the HOPE conference because, boy, I want to see that. I want to see the Homeland Security video showing simulated hackers taking down the power grid.
And if simulated hackers can do that,
imagine what real hackers could do. We laugh, but we could be seeing another witch hunt where hackers are blamed for things that they never even knew they could do.
Not too long ago, I happened to be watching Nightline on whatever network that is.
That's Disney.
Disney. And they were having a whole hacker show. And one of the topics they covered was a DOD break-in of all the power stations. And they were actually able to take the solar panels of one power station out in, I think it was Arizona, and point them all at the control booth and just blind everybody who was working there. So it's actually possible that some of the things that they're saying, you know...
This wasn't a TV Be Gone, was it?
No, this wasn't a TV Be Gone.
All right. Sounds like a TV Be Gone gone mad. But boy, yeah, you got to separate the fact from the fiction. And the potential and the fantasy and all that. and then decide where the blame really lies and where the risk really is.
So
Redbird. Redbird joins us from outside. How you doing? I don't know why. Oh, here you are.
There I am.
There you are. I'm sorry, Bernie. You were saying something.
I said the simulated hackers. Apparently, if this was a simulation of this electrical generating plant just exploding with black and white smoke. Obviously, it was simulation. It was a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we're having the CIA justifying public policy changes affecting what people can do based on a cartoon.
Do you think it said kablam or something as they did that?
I think it had the Batman sound effects.
Wouldn't it be great if they just took like a Roadrunner cartoon or something and used that to prove their point of the dangers of dynamite or something?
It's the same kind of thing.
A Roadrunner cartoon would be more detailed than this guy. There have been incidents somewhere in the world in multiple regions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's get him as a speaker at Hope and we can grill him a little bit. With all the power that we steal, all the power that we steal from the electrical grid when we take it down. Okay, here's something kind of interesting and scary. And again, we'll be taking phone calls in just a few minutes. 212-209-2900 is our phone number. Two Baylor College of Medicine researchers in Houston are working on a cocaine vaccine. They hope will become the first ever medication to treat people hooked on the drug. For people who have a desire to stop using, the vaccine should be very useful, said Dr. Tom Costin, a psychiatry professor, being assisted in the research by his wife, Therese, a psychologist and neuroscientist. At some point, most users will give in to temptation and relapse, but those for whom the vaccine is effective won't get high and will lose interest. Now, I just wonder, and we got this from a couple of people, I wonder, how long before they start giving this to people before they ever try any drugs?
Well, the only way that could possibly work is, A, if the person actually wants to get off of cocaine, right,
mm-hmm.
presumably, or B, if the parents do it before the kids ever try it, right?
Right.
I mean, and a lot of drug users don't necessarily want to get off of it, and if the parents were to vaccinate their kids, that would be admitting that at some point in their future they're likely to try cocaine. You know what I mean? It's just a very strange
thing. You just sort of slip it into the Cheerios or something, and then maybe they'll just never, I don't know. But no, it won't stop them from trying cocaine. It simply means that they won't get high from it. Then they'll say, wait a minute, there's something wrong. I gotta get more. And then they're just going to overdose on it without ever realizing what they're doing to themselves. Or they're going to try some other drug. I don't know. There's always dangers with things like this. So you have to recognize that as well. And there's Orwellian implications, too. I'll bet they experiment in prisons and in the military on people with things like this and see what happens to them.
Are you saying there are cokeheads in the military?
Well, how else do you explain that? Let's not get into that. But no, of course, there's drug problems everywhere. Bernie, do you have something?
Yeah, there's a interesting Supreme Court case, actually, not really a Supreme Court decision, just a decision to not take a case, which is pretty interesting in itself. Sprint, Nextel, you know, they merged, and T-Mobile were taking a case to the Supreme Court to fight against an 11th Circuit court decision that prohibited wireless carriers from listing taxes and regulatory fees separately on, like, cell phone bills. Here in Pennsylvania, we have something called the gross receipts tax. I think we also have it in Illinois, which is a tax on businesses. Like basically a business privileges tax, actually not a privilege tax, but you have to pay a tax based on your gross receipts. Well, Sprint Nextel adds that on your cell phone bill and charges the consumer for that. It's really a tax on the business. Now, if they want to add it into the pricing of their plans, that's fine, but that's not what Sprint's doing. And T-Mobile and the other, and Verizon and the other carriers, they pull the same stunt. Well, now the Supreme Court has declined to weigh in on that dispute. And now that means that states may now constitutionally tell wireless carriers that they may not separately list tax regulatory fees and taxes that are supposed to be levied against the carrier as separate line items the consumer ends up paying for. And the reason this is good is it makes it easier for the consumers. It will make it easier for consumers to actually compare rates. So you'll actually know what you're actually paying per month. When all these fees are built into the annual rate. I still think the consumer should be able to see how much taxes the carrier is, how much their cell phone bill is going to these fees, but they can't actually separately list them as something that's now as a, or if a state says you can't do that to a wireless carrier, the wireless carrier can't charge you back for those taxes as a separate line item. So it's an interesting thing to see how this is going to affect cell phone bills in different states.
I wonder how many people actually take the time to look at their cell phone bills. A lot of people just get them electronically now. They don't even get paper. They just deduct it from their bank accounts, and they don't even know what they're being charged for half the time. So, yeah, it's a sad thing.
I get an electronic bill, but I read it very carefully, and I still have no idea what I'm being charged for.
Well, you're also unusual in reading it at all, but you're not unusual in not knowing what you're being charged for.
In this case, it seems like the national carriers would probably resort to modifying their systems to show the fees for the most restrictive state. For instance, like if Pennsylvania had these restrictions in place, any other state would probably benefit from that as well, because they're probably not going to change their system so that bills just sent to that state can't list these items separately. Do you think that's true?
No, I think that the carriers are large enough to operate on a state-by-state basis, and if they can charge New York consumers $3 more than they can charge, California consumers, they will take every advantage to charge those three extra dollars.
That's rather cynical, but I agree. Okay, a couple other phone-related stories to close out the news section of the program. Again, phone number 212-209-2900. And these are both rather fun. A team of four shoplifters used cell phones to coordinate their simultaneous thefts of three pricey TV sets and a computer at a Walmart store in Commack, Long Island, according to Suffolk County Police. The title of the story in Newsday, Cell Phones Help Coordinate Heist at Walmart. it's amazing how technology is blamed for all sorts of things. I guess they'll be banning cell phones in stores next.
Wait, so is this the actual proof we've been waiting since, like, 2000 that a cell phone is, in fact, an instrument of crime?
Well, now it is, yeah. Suspects use cell phones to coordinate their crime, according to the police report, and left through a fire door exit without paying for the items, valued at over $2,000. Now, you know, of course, maybe they just were talking to each other on the phone, they got excited and forgot and just left with the TV sets, but I don't know. They use cell phones to communicate. Wow, what a surprise that is. Okay, and the other fun story, and this we actually should have reported last week because it happened a little while ago. Telephone companies, and we mentioned this a few shows ago, I was kind of surprised. Telephone companies have cut off FBI wiretaps used to eavesdrop on suspected criminals because of the FBI's repeated failures to pay phone bills on time. I was surprised that they had to pay to have wiretaps put on suspects, but apparently the phone companies make big money at this. A Justice Department audit released a couple of Thursdays ago blamed the lost connections on the FBI's lax oversight of money used in undercover investigations. Poor supervision of the program also allowed one agent to steal $25,000 by coordinating a robbery of TV sets out of a Walmart. In at least one case, a wiretap used in a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act investigation was halted due to untimely payment. FISA wiretaps are used in the government's most sensitive and secretive criminal investigations and allow eavesdropping on suspected terrorists or spies. They also said that we found that late payments have resulted in telecommunications carriers actually disconnecting the lines established to deliver surveillance results to the FBI, resulting in lost evidence. So, yeah. Okay. Yes, go ahead.
The hidden lead in this, or the buried lead in this story, is how much of your tax dollars is actually ripped off in these extremely inflated prices that phone companies charge law enforcement agencies for wiretaps. A single wiretap warrant, depending on the length of time that the judge allows the wiretap to occur, could easily be five figures, like over $10,000, just for a single wiretap. It could be tens of thousands of dollars if it's a complicated case with a lot of suspects. And this comes out of your pockets, people. This is a huge ripoff. There's no way on earth they could really justify those prices because they're not really public, even though I think we have quoted them before on the air, because they're not publicized much. They get away with it because it's just, nobody really worries about it. There's no accountability. Like Verizon or whatever can just say to the FBI, okay, if you want to wiretap these people for a month, it's going to going to cost you $20,000.
Yeah, it's a rip-off. It's a rip-off on two fronts, because not only are you paying for it, but a company is making a huge amount of money from you paying for it. It's not just you're paying the government to wiretap. That's bad enough, but you're paying, and then this company is profiting immensely from it. So, yeah, it's like one hand feeding the other over there.
Your tax dollars could be more effective, or at least the prices should be reasonable based on the amount of work they have to do to accomplish it. These are basically just a few keystrokes that have to be done. The system, the infrastructure is already in place and paid for by your tax dollars. The whole CLIA, Communications Act for Law Enforcement Assistance, wiretapping infrastructure we have throughout this country, it's already in place. There's not a lot that has to be done.
Well, that's a tragedy in and of itself, the fact that that exists and it's so easy to do. But, yeah, the fact that you're being ripped off in addition to that, that's something else. Okay, again, going through the phones in just a couple of minutes, 212-209-2900. Here are a couple of letters, which you can send us your letters to Off the Hook, oth@2600.com. This is from Jay in Wisconsin. I listened to your January 16th show and heard Emmanuel read a story about Social Security numbers being exposed through the mail here in Wisconsin. At the time of your show, it was the second time, but it's happened again for a third time. It's amazing to me that after this happening three times in a little over a year, it was suggested that Administration Secretary Michael Morgan be fired for not doing his job to fix this. Our governor said that was ridiculous. I'm not sure how ridiculous that notion actually is. Now, a question. I was talking to my dad tonight, and he was on a landline using a cordless digital phone. I was on a Motorola cell phone. He said that I sounded clear, but he sounded terrible to me. In fact, his old-fashioned corded phone, was much clearer. I'm wondering if an analog cordless phone would improve sound quality and if there was a certain brand or type I should look for. Oh, by the way, his digital phone was bought at Radio Shack, which is half the problem right there. Guys, any suggestions on how to solve this problem? No, we have no suggestions.
Well, it's,
I'm sorry.
It's possible that something was interfering with the wireless, the cordless phone. If he has Wi-Fi in the house, a lot of cell phone, sorry, not cell phones, but cordless phones will interfere with that. So maybe try a different frequency band.
Different band, different frequency. Maybe a different phone. Maybe the phone is just bad. That's possible. Okay, one more letter, then we'll go to the phones. 212-209-2900. If you get disconnected, just call right back. It'll ring again. Dear Off the Hook, I just finished watching a sneak peek of the soon-to-be-released movie called Untraceable. You guys hear about this movie?
I saw the preview.
You saw the preview. Okay, well, this guy says, I thought it would be appropriate to mention how horrible this movie was. It wasn't bad because it was completely devoid of plot. It was decent, at least from a thriller perspective. The bad part was the propaganda that was subtly a part of the film. The movie played as if it was one large commercial against net neutrality, finding ways to demonize people advocating net neutrality. The movie displayed some of the most gruesome and horrible violent acts, all linking it to the unfiltered content available on the internet. Throughout the entire movie, there are comments and innuendos that if only we could filter the internet, none of this would ever happen. But net neutrality was not the only target. The NSA was brought in and refused to help because it was domestic. This movie was almost a primer on the recent telecommunications politics. Fortunately, I did not pay for this movie. I received free promo tickets. So I don't know how much better that makes you feel. But starting this weekend, millions across the country will be paying to be influenced and programmed against freedom of information due to the imagination of Hollywood writers now on strike and their bosses. Signed, Charles from Minneapolis, who says it's probably not even feasible to boycott the movie, but maybe we can at least raise awareness.
I don't know if I've subscribed to the idea that, you know, the Hollywood filmmakers are consciously doing this, but I do think that it has that the companies who are looking to implement non-net neutrality policies are you know, of course, using their propaganda, and it sort of trickles down. You know, it's something that affects them. It affects their opinion of the matter, and so they make a movie about what they think is, you know,
it's
happening.
It's like assuming that hackers are taking down the electrical grid. You say it enough times, people start to believe that's reality. And I think we're seeing the same thing here. I looked up Untraceable on IMDb, and it's defined as such. It's about a Secret Service agent, Jennifer Marsh, who gets caught in a very personal and deadly cat-and-mouse game with a serial killer who knows that people, being what they are, both curious and drawn to the dark side of things, will log on to an untraceable website where he conducts violent and painful murders live on the net. The more people who log on and enter the website, the quicker and more violently the victim dies. Suspenseful, intense, and action-oriented, Untraceable also has a relevant and accurate message about today's society. Why are we drawn to evil in our media, etc.? Just look at the news or read a newspaper. It's all bad news and often murder, yet we are drawn to it and read about it. This film explores that, but not in a preachy way, but in a way that is both intense, entertaining, and thought-provoking. Well, like some disagreement, I suppose, and whether or not it's preachy. But Untraceable, that's right. The name of it.
Well, it's also important to note that in the current situation, in the Internet's current situation, if there were actually something going on along those lines, if, you know, you could actually conceive that that could be true, and law enforcement did get involved and work with ISPs, of course things would be traceable, and, you know, the same effect that not having net neutrality would have in terms of the ISPs being able to cut off access to whoever that was still exists. I mean, that's still possible to do if law enforcement had to go that route. But
all right. We can continue talking about this for quite some time, but we do want to get to the phones. I'm surprised there's so many empty lines. People complain they can't get through, but right now, you know, it's quite easy. 212-209-2900. Let's take a phone call over here. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi, good evening, guys. I have a question.
Go ahead.
Can you all guys tell me why it is so difficult to find a MP3 player with an AM? Rather than FM?
Ah, good question. An MP3 player that has an AM radio, not just an FM radio. I would like that. You know, I think it's maybe people have this sense that because it's a music player that you can't listen to music on AM because it doesn't sound as good. But, you know, I use my MP3 player for all sorts of different things, and I like the freedom to be able to listen to not only AM but shortwave or all sorts of other frequencies. Maybe it's something that some AM radio stations would like to push for as well. And
there is one I know of.
You know of an MP3 player that has an AM radio?
Absolutely. It's called the Pogo Your Way, and it's about the size and shape and appearance of an iPod, but it has a pretty decent AM receiver built into it and stereo. What's also nice, it actually has speakers built into it, too. It has stereo speakers. You can listen to... Not AM stereo, but you can we can listen to FM and stereo from speakers. You have it sitting on your desk and listen to AM loud and clear. There's actually a ferrite antenna in it, so it picks up good AM.
Well, why can't you listen to AM stereo? There's AM stereo.
Well, it doesn't have one of those crazy AM stereo decoders in it, which never really took off in the marketplace. And what's really cool about this recorder, and I'm not selling these things, but it's the only one I know of. You can record with this too, and there's just a simple one-touch record button. So if you're listening to something on AM or FM, you can just press this button, and it'll start recording it for future playback. And you can get it from a company called C Crane, who also sells those really cool and easily hackable FM transmitters. So go to ccrane.com, and you can check out the Pogo Your Way. It's a pretty neat AM, FM, MP3 player recorder, and it has a microphone in it.
Does that answer your question, sir? Okay, we'll just have to assume it does. Thanks, thanks for your call. 212-209-2900, and good evening. You're a dial tone, so we're going to move on here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to mention about that movie. I'm not sure how often Hollywood consciously engages in propaganda, but unconsciously there's a tremendous amount of propaganda that goes into Hollywood filmmaking. So in all our media content, you know, it's controlled by the wealthy and the elite, and the corporate mentality seeps right through. So that was my comment.
Thanks for calling. Of course, the hopelessly naive, they always have their say as well.
I just don't think it could possibly be a coincidence that the large media conglomerates put out films or other expressive media that reinforce the notion that it's good to have centralized control over who accesses what information when they have a vested profitable interest in being the ones to have that control.
Well, perhaps some of the Hollywood writers currently on picket lines can call us and say that they were told to send this message.
I don't think they have to be told, but it's what they'll end up making, you know.
Do you think the Hollywood writers will do this on their own? Or I think they get pushed in certain directions in certain cases.
But I don't think it's in the form of an explicit order.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, again, inside information, we'd like to hear about it, oth@2600.com. Let's take another phone call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi, how are you doing?
How are you?
Okay. I wanted to ask, Trend Micro is working on an antivirus for cell phones, because I can get my emails on my cell phones. I wanted to know if you guys had heard how that was developing, to avoid opening files that could put viruses on smartphones.
This is probably more a question for the personal computer show, but I think Redbird has...
Yeah, I don't know how useful that'll be on your smartphone. It's much more strategic to have a good antivirus on your desktop PC, because very few viruses are targeted for mobile platforms like that. So, I mean, there may be some threat, but it's not nearly as much as you would have on your desktop.
Well, I'm sure that's going to change.
But do ask the personal computer guys about it.
All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. We really got to change this phone system so the lines don't hop all over the place. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. This is John. I have a question.
Go ahead.
Regarding cell phones.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. The person who called just a couple of moments ago, she was saying that how you get viruses in the cell phones. Is it possible to get... have a cell phone, a wireless cell phone? I mean, like you were talking before about the FBI copying lines. I don't know if it's possible to do that on a cell phone, is it? Yes.
All right. Well, Bernie, thanks for answering that and making it quick. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh, he keeps calling back. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, I love your program, and I love WBAI.
That's all we need to hear. Thank you so much for telling us that. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh, that's torture. It really is torture.
You look stressed.
I'm stressed because every time I hit a button, the line has gone on to the next line. I have no way of knowing. This phone system is so...
We have a new phone.
Badly designed.
It jumps, right?
This is a new phone?
Yeah, I think it was...
Looks exactly the same. Anyway, we have another call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm going to see what you guys think about what's going on in Texas with Time Warner trying to charge people different prices for how much.
Okay, we already discussed this. You have to listen to the archive. We already discussed this on the air. No point going over old news. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I was wondering when and where the next meeting of 2300 would be.
We don't know about 2300, those bastards. We're at 2600 is meeting every first Friday of the month in various cities around the world. Where are you located?
New York City.
New York City. Okay, so the meeting there will be at the Citigroup Center. That's the building with a little slanty roof on 53rd Street in Manhattan, in the lobby area between the hours of 5 and 8 p.m., first Friday of every month.
53rd Street and...
Between Lexington and 3rd.
And let's spend the time again?
Between 5 and 8 p.m., first Friday of the month. We're out of time. We can't take any more phone calls. We have a full bank of calls, though. I want to thank everybody for calling in. Again, write to us, oth@2600.com. That's our email address. And sometimes you even get a reply, or sometimes it'll get read over the air. We like to hear about various things that are going on. Anything in the works for this weekend? Meetings aren't this weekend, are they? No. All right. Well, in that case... We'll see you in a week, and hopefully more fun, exciting things will have happened. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. If you have those questions about computers and phones and things like that, feel free to call in with those. Manuel Goldstein for Off the Hook. Have a good night.
Go Giants, that's all I can say. That's right. Yay, Giants. Hey, that's right.